Alright, alright. Welcome to Everything Went Black, podcast number 19. Once again, I'm using the wonders of modern technology to reach out across the universe to connect with someone thousands of miles away. This time, it's Morgan, singer of our label mates, grindcore band Kill the Client, all the way down in Austin, Texas. It's Friday night, the end of a long week. I feel particularly worn out tonight. Maybe it's changing seasons, the end of the relentless northeastern summer. Fall seems like a respite. You can take a breath before the brutality of winter sets in. So I want to get this thing over with so I can make it down to Triangulo's Pizza to get some food before the night gets too late. Now it's time to go to sleep, for me. I'd like to thank Ira Bronson of Black Day Creative for putting together the site. Please check out his work at www.blackdaycreative.com if you need any web design. So, you got a good volume level there?
Yeah, I got it up.
Nice. Okay. So, I see that you guys are going to Europe soon.
Yeah, like in, like 10 days.
Is it all Europe?
Yeah.
Cool.
Who, it's like the first show is like Bloodshed Fest in the Netherlands, and then we go from there straight to England for like four shows. And then back into mainland Europe, I guess, for like another, 18 or 20 days or something.
Wow, so it's like a full-on, full-bore run across Europe.
Yeah, I think it's like 25 shows in 26 days.
Cool. Are you guys touring with somebody over there?
Yeah, with Feastum from Finland.
Okay. Grindcore band?
Oh, yeah, straight up, like, fucking sick grindcore band.
Cool. Are you guys have, anything new coming out?
Yeah, we just recorded. It should be actually coming out this week. If not, then early next week. It's a split 12-inch with Feastum, so.
Oh, nice.
It's 8 new songs. Just for that, just, you know, right. It's going to be in vinyl only release in Europe, but then Relapse is going to help us with like a digital only in the States, you know?
Yeah.
When we come back from that, we'll start writing the new full length for Relapse.
Cool. Is the James record that whole thing?
Actually, we for the first time we let somebody else record it. And his name is Jerry. Is it Jerry? Gary Bentz. He lives like in a little shanty outside of Dallas, and he just recorded in a little, it's like a converted bedroom in an old house.
Really? How was that?
Dude, it was awesome. I've never been as relaxed as I was, and everybody said the same thing. Like, you get there, and you know, you just kind of like not really knowing what the fuck it's gonna be, and then it's like. Dude, I knocked out 8 songs and like, I never even heard the music or anything. I knocked out 8 songs vocally. 7 songs because Chris did all the vocals on 1 or 2, so 6 songs in like 3.5 hours.
Damn.
Yeah, it was cool, man. He's a good guy, and the guy's got a fucking ear. The new stuff is fucking amazing. So.
So it was cool working with someone else besides James at the recording helm?
Yeah, yeah. James, you know, he's right there the whole time. But, you know, he wasn't really, you know, twisting the knobs and doing all that shit, which, you know, stressed him out beyond all belief. Like, because he's recorded every single thing that we've ever done. And I think he probably lost a couple years off his life just due from fucking stress.
Yeah.
from dealing with it, you know. It was almost the death of him once. It was making him crazy.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's better just to go into the studio and concentrate on performing as opposed to, like, looking at all the technical aspects of everything.
You know? Yeah, and, you know, he always helps me. You know, he knows how to, like, fucking talk to me, you know, talk me through how I should, you know, kind of do some shit. You know, mostly I just kind of go in there and rip it vocally, but there'll be times I'd be like, no, I'll just kind of change the tone or the texture of what you're doing. And, you know, he knows, he's like my monkey handler, you know, he jerks my fucking chain, tells me to go to the right or left, you know. I'm pretty good. I'm kind of a fucking hammerhead sometimes, so.
Did like what lyrically anything any departures lyrically on this record? You know.
Actually, you know, for the first time, James wrote a whole bunch of it lyrically. You know, he's been going through a lot of personal shit and, you know, got divorced and everything. So he had a lot of shit wound up inside. So he ended up like busting out. We did about half, he did half the songs and then I did half the songs. Oh. And, you know, there's a couple of them on there that are like super, super personal to him. And then, you know, me, I always write like just scathing social, political stuff, you know. But it's more about big time problems, you know. It's not just about like politics, politicians, you know, like the same old fucking shit. We're kind of trying to spread out a little bit, you know, ideal wise. Not, you know, it's not just all like fuck the world, just hate the system shit. You know, you can only fucking beat that dead horse so many times before it gets old.
Yeah, totally, man. So, how was it singing someone else's lyrics? Is that, you know, is it a pretty cool transition or was it a good experience?
We've been working as a team lyrically for years.
Okay.
The Wage Slave, that was all me. And about, I would probably say 65 to 70% of Escalation was all me. With just like little bits of them manipulating my lyrics, you know, and kind of helping things along to like Chris bringing in fully written, fully done songs, James bringing in fully written lyrics. And what we, it would work well with each other, you know, like there may be like one line that fits in with something that Chris wrote that I'll just expand on and it fits, you know, same thing with me. Like I'll just like give a big pile of, you know, lyrics. Some of them don't get changed at all. Some of them, there may be two or three different lines from four or five different songs that get put together to make one thing work correctly. You know, that's something that's really kind of stepped the songwriting forward. And what we do is the fact that we actually work as a fucking team.
Yeah.
You know, and we do it really well because it's really helped. And Chris is doing, he has a completely different vocal style than me. And it really, I really like having different vocalists, you know, being able to layer and balance things back and forth. I think it adds a lot more emotional context and a lot more feel to songs when Chris has a part and then I have a part. You know, it's just, I think it builds better and it feels better in the actual song.
Yeah, that's it's cool having two different types of voices on recordings. I'm a fan of that, even though like we don't really do that a whole lot. It's something I'd like to work on too, as well with Tombs. So with how long have you guys been around for a while?
10 years.
Yeah, because I remember Anodyne playing with you guys down in Texas, a couple shows down there. It was like a lot different band.
Yeah, I remember that. That's when I jumped headfirst into a trash can full of broken beer bottles to finish our set. Yeah, bled all over the place.
I mean, really, it was a lot. There was a lot of lineup changes and whatnot over the years. But it's really, I mean, James and you were like the core of the band for the most part, right?
Yeah, we are the only two like original members. But it really started when James had Enemy of the Sun going, which was him and Chris.
Yeah,
and then our old drummer Chris, who is actually now in. Fuck is that band? Can't believe I can't remember. They're from Dallas. They're like all like gore, like what the fuck are they called?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. They not Disembowelment, but yeah, they're like that slam band.
Yeah. Chris one is in Devourment.
Devourment, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And even Ruben, the guitar player, the original member of Devourment, did vocals on our last record. So,
okay.
But yeah, it originally started out as Enemy of the Sun, which was a lot like, you know, slower, you know, more, like almost like an angry, ugly, early Neurosis kind of sound. And then they just got tired of playing slow and wanted to play fast. And they just started, started doing grind, you know, And Chris left to go to college. So this other asshole who I won't even mention played guitar, and he was the one that played guitar on the Wage Slave record. And they had actually had a couple people try out before me, And I had a hardcore band at the time called Dead Right There. And I started doing double duty, joined Kill the Client at Dead Right There going. And then that thing kind of started falling apart. And I've been in Kill the Client full time ever since. I've had a couple other like little projects and stuff, but nothing. I mean, Kill the Client's my main thing. But it's always been, you know, James is like the full-time, like solid member from day one. It was his idea from the beginning to stop playing slow and start playing fast.
Yeah, that's when I met James, actually. It was he booked Anodyne down in Dallas in one of our first tours down there. And that's when I met James when he was in Enemy of the Sun. And we played with those guys. So I think I've known Delgado for a long time, man.
Yeah, I was actually at that show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm a huge Anodyne fan, dude.
Yeah, it was fun, man. It was a good band to do, definitely. You know,
and I was just listening to, you know, I listen to Anodyne probably every month. I mean,
really?
I listen to Anodyne all the fucking time, dude.
I think about playing with those guys every now and then, like Josh and Joel. Like I see, you know, when Defeatus was around, I checked them out. You know, Defeatus played with Tombs a few times, and Josh and Joel have that band, Radiation Black Body, which is like just bass and drums. And
I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's awesome. It's, you know, I mean, they're great players, man, both of them. And it's just no guitar, instrumental, bass and drums. And then Joel has a band with his wife, Morgan, who was in Azure for a little while. And
yeah, with Hernandez.
Yeah, when Andrew and Monty and, you know, Harris and all those guys. And I just recently saw their, I can't, you know what, dude, I forgot the name of the band. I'm just going to have to write it down somewhere. But I saw them play with Dysrhythmia this past weekend. And it was pretty insane. It was like, imagine Death, the band Death, like Chuck's riffs with just guitar and drums and no vocals. That's pretty much, to me, what it sounds like. A real heavy, like, Death influence. But just instrumental. Yeah, just instrumental. But yeah, I think about playing with those guys, man. I think about how, you know, it might be cool to do something together at some point. And I know Josh and I, like, it just never made it past, like, the conversation, you know, just the talking phases. I just think everyone's, like, got their own thing going on these days. And, you know, it's...
I'm all for an Anodyne reunion.
It'll never be a reunion, man. But it'd be cool to play. Nah, dude, I can't see playing the material. Like, I enjoy the music at the time, and I just feel like everyone's, like, different now, and, like, you know, to revisit the material, I think it'd be just kind of weird, you know, for me, you know, playing a cover at this point.
Yeah, I got you.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was when I first met James and just first started going down to Texas, you know.
It's good times around here, son.
Hell, dude, I hear you, man. I feel like, I mean, we haven't really toured. Like, we're leaving for tour in a couple weeks, but we haven't really done any substantial touring at all this year. We just went, you know, we just did like a short run in Europe. We did like a bunch of dates with Ulcerate and just some, you know, here and there. And it feels like forever since I've been down to Texas, man, down to Austin. And, you know, I really miss being down there, you know. Which leads into the talk of our project, man.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We got to kick that off.
Yeah, dude. We need to get this shit.
Yeah,
we
man.
We need to get this shit kicking like chicken, son.
I've been working on riffs. I got like four.
This is Ian, and so is Jono, dude. I mean, that shit's.
Yeah.
That shit's going to fucking. Dave's, you know, he's talking about like taking like a couple of weeks off of work and just coming down whenever you come down. And
really?
Fucking busting it out, dude. For real.
Dude. Yeah, well, you know, the time frame that we're talking about, like after the first of the year, that might be a really good time frame for me personally, you know, just get like, you know, figure out a time, I'll come down there, I'll just live with you, you and Natalie, and you'll do it, man.
You know, my door's always open to you.
Yeah, I'll send down the riffs, man, because I actually worked on, I have about maybe between three and four, what I consider to be pretty solid ideas for like songs, you know, and like. Short, but, you know, packed with a lot of different, you know, things, you know what I'm saying?
Like me.
Sure. Have you been training at all?
Dude, I've been working, like, like fucking crazy, man. I've been working like 12, 14 hour days every day, which I can't complain because I need the money to, you know, to go to Europe.
Yeah.
So being gone for a month with no real income, so. But yeah, I just, what I've been doing is I've been getting up at 5 in the morning and training in my garage before I go to work. So I've been doing like kettlebell workouts and, I got a Nordic Track ski machine, like an old one, and, I put my my gas mask on with the breathers taped almost closed, and I'll do like half an hour at a pretty good rate of speed on it while I'm rehearsing our set list, which is fucking retarded.
Damn.
So, yeah. But with that, you know, I can go like nonstop ape shit when we play and not miss a beat because I won't get tired.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm basically rehearsing, you know, 3 days a week in my garage, and then when I go to Dallas, it just, you know, since those guys are jamming together, you're not really missing a beat, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Well, you have a pretty serious garage, man. So, like, just kind of describe, like, what you got going on in your garage.
The testosterone dome? It's where men become men. Through pain. I got a power rack in there, you know, an Olympic bar with a bunch of weights. A bunch of kettlebells, all kinds of resistance bands. I got a TRX set up in there now so I can do suspension stuff. I got a track ski machine. I can push all that stuff to the side because the floor is completely covered in mats, and then I have fold-out mats. So if we want to do jiu-jitsu, catch wrestling, sambo, you know, some stand-up stuff, you know, it's fantastic. Probably doing it there, actually tomorrow, 10 a.m., we're going to be, have guys coming over, do a little bit of stick and knife fighting, do some catch wrestling, some jiu-jitsu, good times.
Yeah, man. How long have you been training, like, overall? Like, all, you know, how long have you been doing all this?
Oh, fuck, man. I started wrestling when I was in the 7th grade in Oklahoma. And then, started messing around with martial arts after that. And then I really started training in martial arts in my mid-20s, you know, I was in Dallas, and I started doing some jiu-jitsu stuff with some friends, and I would always mix in wrestling, and then MMA came around, you know, and it's kind of baby phases, and, you know, I've always never been, like, a person to think that there's one solid, complete thing, so I always just, like, trained with whoever I could find, wherever I could go, and just mix it all together, you know, but I've been training pretty solid now. You know, I did CLOT for, you know, 6 years in Dallas, and did JKD, Thai boxing, Kali, Paquita Jersha, you know, Western boxing, jiu-jitsu, sambo, judo, lots of catch wrestling. That's my real favorite thing. And, you know, sticks, knives, guns, bows, arrows, you know, whatever. Whatever hurts.
So you've also, you know, you got a pretty extensive tournament background too, right? You've been competing and whatnot.
Yeah. When I was, you know, I lived in Dallas for a long time. When I was there training CLOT, I would compete in full contact stick fighting and in knife fighting too. So I did that for pretty hard for about 4 years until he started changing the rules. So then when I started, the rules were really open, and by the time that I quit and had to stop doing it before I got pissed was, you know, probably 4 years of competing in that. And then, you know, just jiu-jitsu tournaments, sambo tournaments and stuff like that. I can't, you know, I've had 2 knee surgeries, so I can't really do the, you know, straight MMA anymore, like Thai boxing or anything, because, you know, I like to walk.
yeah, definitely.
But, you know, the knee injuries never stopped me. I mean, the first knee surgery I had, I played a Kill the Client show 7 days later. And then the second knee surgery I had, I played a Kill the Client show 6 days later. So, you know, it's funny playing on crutches or whatever and, you know, not being able to really walk around. And then, you know, the adrenaline kicks in and you just go, oh. You know, I've had people at those shows ask me, because actually we did a lot of shows when I was on crutches and when I was on a cane and all that stuff. And people thought they were props. They thought I was faking it. fuck you, dude. I got a huge open, like 14, you know, 10-inch open gash in my leg full of stitches, you know, where they could rebuild my knee. So, you know, no props. No props, no painkillers, just fucking pure fucking just straight hate.
was he injured? Was those injuries through training or competing or training injuries?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, you gotta take not. I was crazy as a kid, you know, and you know when you're a kid, you can like take a gunshot wound to the chest and heal. You know, you don't ever really think about shit. You know, I was always riding BMX bags, you know, jumping out of trees off of, you know, doing all this, you know. I was the retard, like, oh, you can't do that, you know. Before Jackass was Jackass, I was trying to, you know, hurt myself.
Yeah.
And then I was in the military a long time, started wrestling young, you know, and that just builds up injuries and just wears your body down. And then, you know, knees just fell apart. Just playing a game of football in the park. Some guy cheap shot at me and folded my leg in half. It was all downhill from there.
Yeah, knees, man. It's a complicated joint.
That's why knee bars are so fantastic.
So how long were you in the military? You were for a while?
Yeah, I was 4 years active, you know. I went in right out of high school. And, you know, went to Desert Storm when I was fucking 18 years old. Then got out. Worked a year in construction and then moved to Dallas and went to college. And never did anything with that bullshit degree.
What'd you get your degree in?
Music and video production and business.
Hey man, you're doing two out of three of those things, man. You're a musician and you're doing some business in the music industry.
Yeah, the business of being broke.
Yeah, monkey business, man.
Monkey business, son.
So yeah, man, we're coming into the end of 2012, man. So, you know, you got any thoughts about that?
Well, I think whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I think there's probably going to be more hype. I know that there's, you know, everyone's like talking about the Mayan calendar and all that stuff, but there's also other Mayan calendars that don't just stop at that time, that carry on for years and years farther. But, you know, people get hooked on stuff and they try to make it happen. Just like, you know, the year 2000, everything's going to go to shit, or, you know, fucking, who gives a shit? So the planets are aligned, and what if the world does it? Who gives a fuck? I mean, if it's all going to go out, and, you know, the world's going to crumble and revolution in the fucking streets or whatever, then just let it fucking happen. Believe me, the fucking world's fucked up enough that I don't, you know, all I'm going to take care of is my fucking family and friends, and, you know, if shit starts going down, either you're with me or against me, you know, and yeah, I'm gonna get what I fucking need, and if you don't like it, then, you know, we're gonna have to deal with it in a bad way.
I think that, you know, it's funny because, like, you mentioned that sometimes people seem to make things happen, you know, and I think that, you know, I personally don't think anything's gonna happen, but I think that what's more likely to happen is that, you know, someone is going to be obsessed with this whole idea of something going down, and then that's going to make something happen, if anything at all, you know, manifest itself sort of like through this will, you know, it's like collective, like, will of, you know, having something awful happen.
It's like mass hypnosis on an ignorant level, you know what I mean? They'll be like, because, you know, you got all these fucking doomsday preppers and, you know, and I believe in that stuff, but I believe in that stuff like when the government decides to try to fucking put the grips on you more so than the planets coming into alignment and, you know, some, you know, galactic change and all that shit. I don't believe, I'm an atheist. I don't think, you know, God's gonna fucking rain down fire or any fucking nonsense like that. But there would be plenty of idiots out there that will be wanting to facilitate that shit.
No, totally. What is interesting to me, though, is how, like, economically it just seems like everything's starting to, you know, we're running into, like, the home stretch of, like, this, like, economic system that the world seems to have, like, this global economic system seems to be on its way out.
Yeah, well, I mean, globally everyone's going broke, and everyone's figuring out that, you know, it's, everything's run by big banks, and it's basically nothing but, like, a money-making scheme. And, you know, it's just like, you know, Greece is collapsing, Spain, and, like, you know, that's one of the things about getting ready to tour in Europe is the economy over there fucking sucks. But it's because they're figuring out the same thing that's, you know, we're figuring out here. Most people don't want to listen to it, you know, but everything is owned by big banks, like the fucking, like these big bailouts that we had. You know, all these bailouts, it's just the banks giving money back to banks to make more money for those banks. You know, did the people benefit from it? No. You know, or, they lower these tax rates and everything so, you know, people can get houses. Why? Because they want you to keep paying them money on a 30-year loan before you couldn't get finance for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's not just like, hey, we're really going to try to help you guys get houses and, you know, we're kind of going broke, even though they have, you know, billions upon billions of, you know, stacked up. So then they get money that basically has no value because the government prints it on paper even though there's nothing really backing it. So then they'll make interest off of that forever. Then they'll let people who don't, you know, normally wouldn't be able to get homes have homes. Why? Because they're going to charge you interest on that bank loan because you're not going to pay cash for it. It's just more, it's arm, you know, reoccurring monthly revenue. You know, it's not, they're not trying to fucking help anybody. They're not trying to help the poor and the middle class. They're just trying to make sure that they're getting residual interest off loans that they made on money that they never had.
Yeah. Also, the banks got bigger and bigger, like back, like maybe in our parents' era, when you took out a loan, you went down to a bank, a community bank, you know, a bank that, you know, you had a face-to-face relationship with somebody, and that now with these larger corporations, your debts get sold and bought by other banks, and there's this like abstraction of like the whole process, you know. And I mean, you know the deal, what happened a couple of years ago, man, with like this whole, you know, situation with the, you know, this selling off all this debt, and then suddenly everyone's like, you know, 401k accounts are worthless, you know. And it's like that abstraction and everything getting bigger and bigger, and that seems to be, like, to me at least, you know, one of the major problems we have, where the dollar isn't even backed by anything solid anymore. You know, it's taking off the gold standard.
It's basic loose paper, you know. And they sold like tons and tons and tons of debt to China, who can't even pay their own debts right now. You know, it's just like the coal industry. You know, in America, we have like the world's largest clean coal deposit is in America. But Bill Clinton, you know, I understand keeping the environment clean and, you know, taking care of the earth and all that. But when you're getting backed by oil companies, even though it's hidden, you know, oil companies, you know, that shit pollutes the earth too. They try to sell it off, you know, like, oh, it's a new way. But then, you know, when Clinton, when he was in office, you know, passed all these EPA regulations, which I support, you know, don't get me wrong. But he has money and people invested with a large coal corporation in China. And as soon as the EPA regulations passed in the United States, the profits of that company quadrupled in less than a year. You know, yeah. So he's facilitating making money in another country. You know, it's like they're trying to, you know, get this World Bank, like, New World Order shit going, you know, and they do things here to make money over there, same thing that they'll do things over there to make money over here. It's a fucking racket. It doesn't matter what country you live in, it's a fucking racket, you know. And they, in Iceland, you know, they tried to force Iceland into being completely broke. Well, the people of Iceland said, fuck you, you know, and those people that did that shit, facilitated that shit, are in prison now.
Yeah.
You know, and we need to do that shit here.
There was that documentary, An Inside Job. Have you ever seen that?
9/11 was an inside job?
No. This is about the whole financial crash. I think it was called An Inside Job or something like that. It's it talks about Iceland and all of this, the interest rates and the Federal Reserve and all this stuff. I just saw it a couple of weeks ago, and I want to watch it a few more times, man, because there was like, it was so filled with dense financial information that you kind of need to absorb it. You need to, like, return to it a few times.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's called An Inside Job. That was, like, a mind-blowing, like, documentary about this whole thing. So, like, coming into this next election, man, we don't even really have anyone to vote for, if you think about it.
Well, they both tell the same lies with different words, you know?
Yeah.
They're both part of the same machine, you know. It's You know, it's a two-headed beast. One of them they're gonna lie to you and, you know, and tell you one thing. The other one's gonna lie to you and tell you another thing. They play off complete opposites of each other. You know, and that's how they keep you trapped in the bipartisan vortex. So you know, there's no other. They make sure there's no other choices. I mean, you had a choice in Ron Paul, and his own party, you know, turned on him because, you know, he didn't toe the company line. You know, he's the only guy. You know, he was the only guy that was even kind of a hope of doing something different and moving forward. But you know, he wants to stay away from big banks and big corporations and ending the Fed and ending all these things that he knows and everyone else. Oh, I can't say everyone else. Most, you know, a lot of other people know are wrong. Well, the big part of the machine is going to make sure that that gets pushed away. You know, that's why people, you know, Fox News and like they started like spinning all these stories like Ron Paul was a racist and Ron Paul was this and Ron Paul is that. He's, you know, this and that. Ron Paul wants to put, you know, everything back just to the people the way that the government should be.
Right.
You know, when this country was founded, you know, people, you know, the president still had a fucking job. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like the founding fathers, they got together like every couple of months and tried to like kind of work shit out. You know, and then it's become this huge job and these guys get paid exorbitant amounts of money for nothing. Like life, you know, they don't give a shit about, you know, well, Obama's Health Care Act or Romney's, you know, health care that he did in fucking Massachusetts or wherever the fuck he's from. Because they get lifetime fucking health care. It's part of like being a senator and a congressman and all that shit. You know, they get, you know, they get all that shit for free. You know, poor bastards like me and you, you know, everybody else that are even in worse conditions than us, they don't care. They don't care about those people. You know, I'm a full supporter of capitalism. I mean, we need money. We need a fucking free market to, you know, but man, we got to take care of ourselves at the same time. We have a horrible education system in this fucking country. We got an even worse healthcare system in this country. You know, we don't take care of our old people. We don't take care of, you know, and it's not saying that we have to give everybody handouts. I mean, you got to take care of your own fucking business. You can't be a sponge. You can't be a leech. You know, you can't blame the fucking, you know, everything on, you know, on somebody else, you know. Like, you don't get, like I said before in a fucking interview a couple of years ago, you know, if some guy went to college for 13 fucking years to be a brain surgeon, don't get butthurt that he's making big money. He's working on people's brains, saving lives. Your jackass is working at fucking McDonald's 2 days a week. That's your fucking fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
But, I mean, there comes a point that we, you know, you gotta give back. You can't just take. In the whole system that we live on and live in this country, it's all about just taking it. It's all about me. I have this and that, you know. It's not, you know, we live in the greatest country in the world, but we instead of just trying to take care of each other, we try to figure out how to profitize from each other. You know, we gotta get a better education system here. We gotta get, you know, healthcare system. We gotta take care of fucking Social Security. We gotta take care of the old people. Cause, motherfucker, I'm getting old. You know, I'm 41 fucking years old. You know, I'm no spring chicken. I'm already falling apart. Who's gonna fucking pay for that shit? I've worked fucking every day of my life since I was 15 years old. You know what I mean? And who's gonna take care of me in the end? No one. I'm gonna have to do that. You know, whether it's with some fucking asshole's healthcare system. You know, I've been in other countries, man. Like when I was stationed in fucking Germany. German people, you get sick, you go to the fucking hospital, they take care of you, you go home. You know, because they just want to make sure that their people are fine. It's not about like making shit tons of fucking money and profitizing money, you know, profitizing from every single fucking human being. You know, it's like they gives, you know, they keep you fucking sick in this fucking country because Big Pharma, I mean, it's called Big Pharma for a fucking reason. They want to keep you sick so they can make money off of you from birth to grave.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that leads into, like, a whole array of other things. I mean, you know, for be it, like, the legalization of marijuana or even hemp. Like, hemp products are still legal because they're, you know...
And that's all, you know, bullshit from the fucking system too. Just like petroleum oil. I mean, we had fucking, you know, fuel efficient cars and stuff in the fucking early 1900s, dude.
Yeah.
And fucking oil industry fucked all of that up. You know, and it's the same thing of like, oh, marijuana is so bad. Well, marijuana, you know, hemp is not marijuana. It's a cousin of marijuana.
It's not psychoactive at all. They lump it together.
I mean, hell, I take fucking hemp protein.
Yeah, man.
It's the best for you, you know. It's a complete protein, you know, complete, you know, it's the best kind of protein that you can ingest, you know, but it's like super fucking expensive. I don't do drugs. I don't drink. I don't do nothing. I'm not, you know, I'm not like, hey, let's take some hemp protein powder, go trip out. I mean, come on, dude. It's fucking bullshit. It's all bullshit. You know?
Well, it's expensive because it's, we have to import it. You know, like they can't legally grow it in this country. So the hemp, you know, hearts or whatever the hell they make the fucking hemp protein shakes out of has to come from somewhere else. And there's all that transportation cost. That's why it's like, you know, $60 for like a container of hemp protein, you know?
Yeah, it's expensive as balls.
Yeah.
But, they don't want people to have, you know, marijuana, even though it's been proven over and over again that it has like a lot of, you know, medical benefits. You know, just because it's out there, it's the same thing. They want to keep it illegal because there's a business inside of the business of things being illegal.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with fucking prohibition. You know, how did all those guys make all that money? Because it's booze was illegal. They take it away from you. You're going to do anything you can to get it. And there's always going to be somebody out there that's going to want to make money to get you the things that you're not supposed to have.
Well, on the other side of that, too, there's even just the whole prison system.
The prison system is the biggest, you know, it's fed directly off of that. When a guy can go to prison for more time for selling marijuana than someone murdering and raping somebody, we're at a fucking seriously wrong fucking point in our lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, and also marijuana is like lumped in there with like meth, and it's on the same level of illegalness as like stuff that like will destroy your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Alcohol, like one of the worst substances available for mass consumption, is completely legal. I mean, that's all these like Republican douchebags. Their trip is like, you know, having a cigar and a fucking scotch, you know, and like scotch will destroy your life probably quicker than smoking marijuana will, you know.
Yeah, that's all fucking legal.
That's all good.
It's like the old Bill Hicks joke, you know. It's like, which one's worse, booze or out? You know, booze or weed? You know, you go to a concert and someone's acting like an asshole, punching at everyone and screaming. What's he doing? He's drinking. If he's chilling out and just watching the band perform, having a good time, what's he doing? Oh, well, he's probably smoking weed.
Yeah.
I mean, booze is way harder on your body.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah.
You know, of course, it's easy to keep track of and tax and tariff and, you know, all that shit with booze. You know, because your average guy is not just going to have a still in his backyard, you know, making his corn squeezings and all that shit. You know, like someone, you could easily grow, you know, your own weed if it was legal. But then, you know, how are they gonna tax you on that? You know, even if it's for your own consumption. Same thing with fruits and vegetables. They're trying to outlaw people growing their own fruits and vegetables in this country now, because they want you to buy from them. And I personally believe when the time comes that marijuana does get legalized in this country, is they're still going to do the same thing. It's just like they're trying to get rid of small-time organic farmers. They're going to do the same thing to fucking marijuana people. They're going to make it so fucking expensive to grow it and sell it that they're just going to weed you out of the business slowly. Pardon the pun, weed you out of the business. Right. But that's what it's going to do, you know, because big business feeds big business, you know, and that's the way. It'll probably eventually get passed in this country, but when it happens, it's gonna be ridiculous for a while, you know, because they're gonna want to make it worth their while to do it.
Yeah, they're gonna make sure their assets are protected and everything, and you know they have a plan in place, you know, before they go ahead and legalize it.
Yeah, I mean, which is sad, you know. Even if they just legalize hemp, you know, they would cut. They could cut out completely, just like cutting down trees, you know, which we need more than anything, because you can harvest, you know, so much more hemp on an acre than you can trees, and you can harvest it 4 times a year, and it makes like 20 times more things for more profits than what trees do, and we need trees more than anything. So you're saving the environment by just changing the crop alone,
yeah.
Or something that you're not even going to get high off of.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, I just, there's a company, Datsura, I think they make hemp kimonos. you know.
Oh, nice. I'm sure that's fucking expensive as shit, though.
Yeah, it is, man. You know, but I'm gonna order one of those, I think. You know. More people...
Make it high when you start rolling, man.
The more, the more people buy it, man. Maybe they'll come down in price. Also, it's a superior cloth, too, you know. So yeah, why do you think...
My pigskin competition, which is like, it weighs like 47 and a half pounds.
Yeah.
It's like wearing a weight vest.
Yeah, man. Definitely. So why do you think Ron Paul did not go over to the Libertarian Party? It seems like a lot of his policies and a lot of his views were more in line with the Libertarians. Like, you know, I was hoping that, you know, I mean, he remained a Republican throughout this whole thing.
Yeah, he kind of leaned towards the Libertarian side, but, you know, it gets back to that weird, like, kind of core. Because that was, like, the one thing about Ron Paul is he's a pretty religious dude.
Yeah.
You know, which Libertarians are way more, you know, open and, you know. You know, Ron Paul is very pro-life. That's like the one thing, you know, is he wanted to take Roe versus Wade out of the Constitution, which I thought was the biggest thing about, the only thing about Ron Paul that I didn't like is he wanted to take Roe versus Wade out of the Constitution, you know, which would, you know, make abortions, you know, a state-by-state choice, you know, if they wanted to outlaw it or not. You know, and when you start doing shit like that, like the state of Texas, you got a lot of fucking, like, crazy-ass right-wing Bible-banging motherfuckers around here.
Yep.
So you know they're going to outlaw abortions. Well, how many millions of women do we have living in the state? You know, they're going to have to go back to, you know, it would be doing like backstreet abortions and things like that. People start getting hurt. People start dying. People start, you know, I mean, and that's wrong. You know, it's not any of the government's fucking business what a woman does with her body. She's going through enough shit by having to be given the choice of, having to have an abortion. You know, I don't need the government, you know, sticking their face in it any more than they already have. You know, but I think that was the thing with Ron Paul, that he didn't go full libertarian because he is relatively conservative on a lot of his views. Which there's nothing wrong with being a conservative. There's nothing wrong with being a fucking liberal. What people need to do is try to, like, not even think in that mindset. The mindset should be solving fucking problems.
Yeah.
And people about not being, you know, well, I don't like what he says, and I don't like what his party says, because when they take the time to only give you two choices, so it separates you, because it's easier to control groups of people when they're separated than when they are when they're together.
Totally.
And that's why they keep you stuck in a fucking bipartisan bullshit vortex, because then nothing's ever going to get solved. You know, it's the same thing, like, Barack Obama absorbed, like, a huge problem that, you know, fucking 12 years of Republican failure, he got that ball. You know, and, you know, Barack Obama's not the, you know, he's a fucking dickbag too. He's a fucking globalist, New World Order fucking douche at the same time. But they create a huge problem on one side, and the other side absorbs it, and then and they just take the time to pick it apart, separate more pieces. The same thing, like, between Bush Sr., Clinton, and Bush Jr., you know. It's just a constant cycle of just manipulating everything to basically turn everything against you as a person, as an independent person. You know, there's never any fucking help, and there's never any fucking hope, because we're stuck in a fucking bipartisan fucking system.
Do you think the Libertarians will ever really get a stronghold in this country? I mean, I feel like more people are sort of aware of what their you know, what their policies are, and, like, you know, what their views are. And, you know, do you think, like, in our lifetime, there'll ever be a third party?
I do. I really think that there will be. It needs to be more sooner than later. You know, but too many people are, you know, they're hypnotized. You know, they're hypnotized by Fox News or CNNBC or, you know, whoever. You know, it's all yellow journalism on both sides, both parties. They have people to pull for them. And there needs to be more ideas put on the table than just two. You know what I mean? There needs to be, like, people working together for us to progress as a country. I mean, than just being like, oh, I'm a Republican, or I'm a Democrat, or I'm a conservative, or I'm a liberal, or whatever the fuck, you know, whatever bullshit I don't want to put on it.
Yeah. No, definitely. So when you guys get back from Europe, do you guys have any plans for any U.S. touring? Or, you know, next year or anything like that, like after the new record comes out, planning that far ahead?
We definitely want to do some more stuff. I know that, as we get the new record put out, we definitely want to do some more UX stuff. I mean, we haven't really done anything serious touring-wise in a couple of years because, you know, life is not in the way, you know?
Yeah.
And we really want to get back out of play. I mean, we had an East Coast tour that was planned last year, and it fucking fell apart. And I would like to go back and make those dates up to all those people that, you know, put that shit together for sure. Maybe it could be a Tomb Skilled client.
Sure,
know.
Man. Yeah. Yeah, you know, definitely, man.
I mean, awesome, you know.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun, too, man, as well. Yeah, man, we don't, you know, next year is next year, man. We're working on a new record. We got like half of it written right now. And, you know, hopefully going to record that before the spring, you know. So we'll have a new thing out next year at some point, you know, we can do some road work together.
Be awesome, dude.
Yeah. No, there was that, the concept of Tombs, Kill the Client, and Ken Mode touring together too, man.
I would be down for that. I can't stand Canada, but those dudes are okay.
Yeah, remember there was like this text message, like three-way correspondence between all of us that one time. It was like, you know, bringing tie pads out on the road, kettlebells, you know, we were going to train while we were touring.
I got all that stuff in my garage right now. You know, let's make that happen next year, dude.
Yeah, those guys have been asking too, man. I think that'd be a killer bill, man. I think people would be into that. I think I'd be into it. It'd be a fucking show I'd go to.
Well, another thing that's great about that, if it could ever happen, is the fact that you would have a completely diverse show.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have like five bands that all sound exactly the same. You know, Ken Mode, Tomb, Skill the Client. None of it even sounds close. You know, we all have this. We all try to accomplish the same thing. We all have basically the same mindset. You know, we all, but nothing that we do ever even sounds close to the same. It would be such a diverse line. See, I love shows like that.
Yeah.
And shows like that really don't happen anymore.
No.
What are the two things you report?
I'm fighting this butterfly. What's the ultimate fighter?
Stop the ultimate fighter. That's the fight's role.
He's holding
the TiVo hostage.
Holding the television hostage. He's recording two things at one time.
Oh, Jesus.
I can either watch Fighting or Fighting.
Some things roll. You know, it's all about fighting, Mike.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We barely talked about any UFC stuff, man. So what do you think of John Jones? What's your opinion on that guy?
I think he's a fucking hot butter douche.
Yeah.
You know, I think if he would just stop talking and stop just trying to, you know, he seems like such, like everything's written out for him whenever he talks. It's all so fake and so plastic. Inside the ring, the guy is a fucking amazing talent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But outside the fucking ring, dude, just shut up. Just shut your fucking cake hole. You're not fucking curing cancer. You're not fucking, you know, shooting rockets into fucking space. You know, you're not getting rid of fucking GMO crops. You're just a fighter guy. You know, you just got some huge contract, and you're still a fucking douche. You know what I mean? That doesn't change the fact that you're a fucking douche. You're like a fucking, like a douche robot. Like, oh, well, I just want to be this for this. You know, I just everything about that guy outside the ring I can't stand.
Yeah, I think, like, the thing I dislike about him is his sort of pro-basketball player attitude that he brings into, like, the UFC, you know? And I feel, you know, you used to have guys who have a different – they had, like, sort of like a non-pro-athlete attitude about fighting. And then John Jones comes in and he has – you know, it's almost like you're talking to, like, Lawrence Taylor or something like that, you know? He's like, oh, I just do this for the money. You know, I want to, you know, I fight two or three times a year and retire early. And, you know, it's just like.
About that part is he didn't start out being that way.
Really?
He didn't talk about fighting for the money until he won the title.
Okay, you're right. True.
He started getting dropped in there.
Yeah, but like, it's how people deal with being a champ. You know what I'm saying? It really speaks more about his character than like when he's not a champ. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the thing is, what I think is, kind of changed about fighting and about MMA is a lot of the humility and the humbleness of the individual is gone. I mean, it's good to have different characters in there, like the bad boys, like fucking Nick Diaz. You know, I mean, he's just a couple of shades away from what, you know, Tito Ortiz started that whole bad boy thing back in the day.
Right, exactly.
Never really cared for that guy. Tough guy in the fucking ring, but dude, keep all that shit talking. You know, I don't like all the shit talking. You know, I don't like all the fucking. And then Rampage Jackson took it to another fucking level. And he used to be funny, and then he just became dumb.
Right. You know?
And as he got older and more irrelevant, he still tried to talk shit like he could fucking whip everybody's ass. You know, and then, you know, he lost a step. It's just like, homeboy, you're going to get old. You know, you can't fight forever. So, you know, let's not talk shit like you whip King Kong's ass when you can't.
Right, right.
You know.
But there's just something real. I just, you know, that vibe that John Jones has doesn't really sit well with me. And also his fucking knee kicks, man. Like, I feel like there's that knee kick that's...
That's fucking, that Thai stop kick. I don't like it either.
Well, that's like a self-defense. Like, that. I mean, it's cool if you're, like, defending yourself on the streets or something like that. Like, that's totally, you know, a legitimate, like, Muay Thai attack, you know, but I think in like a sporting sort of arena, like something like that is really, it's easy to injure someone. The same way like strikes to the back of the head, you know, aren't legal. Like I think that there should be some adjustment in the rules for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The thing about that, there's two things that he does that I think are completely dirty. And that kick is one of them. And the other thing he does is he likes to like paw out like a range, you know, he kind of covers it up like it's a range finder. You know, like he's just trying to see how far you are out there before he can hit you, you know, with power from his other hand. But he constantly is sticking his fingers in people's eyes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But he always tries to be like, oh, I'm just like pawing this out there, you know, oh, you know, so I can drop this hammer on you. Well, he never really throws like really hard shots, you know. So he's just trying to eye jab you. So that he can really start like throwing his elbows and, you know, and all that spinning stuff. Well, if you've got somebody's finger in your eye, then your eye's going to be blurry for a while. So when that spinning back elbow or any of that other shit that he does happens, you're not going to see it. It's cheap and it's fucking dirty and they need to do something about it. But yeah, the knee kicks like that, dude, come on. You know, I mean, I do that shit, you know, I did that shit fucking see that's street fighting fucking tactics.
Totally.
Have a little bit of honor. You know, you're in a ring. Fucking, just go in there and fucking hammer it out.
That's how I see it.
You know?
That's exactly how I see it. You know, I mean, his whole shit almost got turned upside down, man, with that arm bar last week, man. So,
honestly, I didn't watch it because I don't want to have anything to do with that guy. I mean, even if he gets beat, I'll just watch the replay. Yeah. I'm never going to pay for another one of his fights.
Oh,
and there may be some great lineups on a card he fights on in the future, but I'm not paying my money for that dude. I really wanted to see the flyweight title, you know, between fucking Mighty Mouse and Benavidez. That was, to me, that's the main fight to watch that was on that card.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I will never pay another cent to watch a John Jones fight, period. I'm done with that cat.
Yeah.
But if Belfort would I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that Belfort broke his arm, like broke John Jones' arm, but John Jones kept fighting.
Yeah, I read that somewhere, but I don't think that's been fully confirmed, you know? But yeah, he was in a sling, though. That's for sure. John Jones.
Dude, Vitor's a black belt.
Yeah, man.
And dude, that guy's a mountain of muscle, homeboy, you know? So, like, you know, starts gorilla fucking your arm, that shit's going to hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, that was early. That was, like, in the first round, man. Like, he literally, he almost took him out, man, with that arm bar. So.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been amazing.
I saw the highlights of it on Inside MMA on Monday, but I didn't actually watch it happen.
Yeah. I was like, on my feet, man. You know? But anyway, thanks, Morgan. I usually try to keep these things, like, just about an hour long, you know, just for, you know, listenability and also for space on the server, you know what I mean? So, you know, appreciate you taking the time on this Friday night, man.
Hey, no problem. Just, you know, things we can take away from this interview is, Doom's Kill the Client Kimbo Tour, 2013.
If we don't get blown up on the 21st of December, that is, you know, the world doesn't end, so.
we can actually, you know, maybe do a show on an Aztec, on a Mayan temple.
Yeah.
You know, Tombs, Kill the Client, Kid Mode on that deal. And then when actually the world starts falling apart, doesn't get any better than that. I mean, that's showmanship right there. That's big time.
Yeah, man. No,
that's like Rocky IV type big time.
Rocky IV.
Yo, did you catch America, son? Whatever the fuck, you know.
Did you catch the Expendables yet? Expendables 2?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I saw it in the theater like opening night.
Oh,
come on,
shit.
Now.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, man. I think I know I'm gonna fucking miss it in the theaters, man.
You gotta go see it in the theater. You gotta go see it for the one-liners alone. The fucking one-liners in Expendables do a fucking fantastic.
How does it compare to the first one? Because the first one, I was a little bored, man, honestly. You know, the first one didn't really kick my ass.
You got some kind of problem or something, because the first one was awesome.
There was a little bit more storyline
in the first one. Like, the second one is like a whole, like, there's like very little storyline. It's just like all crazy ass fucking gunfights and fist fights.
Oh, that's cool. That's kind of what I wanted, because I don't want to see like any emoting like there was in the first one. You know, there was like Stallone had this like, you know, love interest there, and you know, there was like
a
woman.
There's no like wax poetic times or anything like that, you know?
Yeah. That's what I want to get.
Awesome action movie one-liners and then a bunch of old broken down ass fucking action movie guys.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Jean-Claude Van Damme plays a great villain, dude. That guy is a fucking hot butter douche in real life, and it really comes across when he plays a bad guy. So. Yeah.
I just revisited the Kickboxer series. That's a great one, man. Like the one with the one, there's like five.
Yeah.
There's like five Kickboxer movies.
I think the third one, when they go fight on the dude's ranch.
Yep.
Dude, there's a lot of like big time, like the Machado brothers are in that.
Yeah,
one. There's,
yeah.
There's some hidden fucking like world class champions in that fucking movie, dude.
Yeah, it's like this sort of like to the death match at that, that big scary guy's place, like out in Thailand or wherever the hell he was, you know, and, yeah, they're enjoyable, man. That one dude, Sasha Mitchell, the guy who picked
up.
That guy's pretty fucking. I don't know if he has any titles or anything like that, but he looks like he has a lot of skill, man.
Yeah, he was. Actually, saw an interview with him in an old martial arts magazine. He's a pretty legit guy when it comes to fighting skills. I mean, I don't know what always got or what always done, but I remember he had a pretty stacked up. The credentials of what he's actually accomplished martial arts wise.
Yeah,
because he was on some stupid ass fucking sitcom or whatever.
Well, you know, there's really back, especially back in the 80s and the 90s, there really wasn't any career moves to be made in martial arts, really. You know what I mean? What are you going to, you know, there was no UFC or anything like that. But I mean, he had some pretty legit, like, Muay Thai style action. You know, when in his kickboxing movies, so maybe that's what his background was in, that or like Taekwondo or something like that. You know, you can tell when you're throwing that hip in there and those round kicks, you know.
Hey, man, you gotta chop down the tree, you know that deal.
Oh, that's that Thai style, you know, breaking bamboo with your shins, you know what I mean?
We used to do that, man. Like when I was doing C-Lad, we'd hammer the forearms, the shins.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff on Chimande. Which is like hitting bone on bone, boom, you know, and just hardening up your forearms too, and your shins, and then you take a fucking, a Kali fighting stick, and then
you roll it out, yeah,
roll bumps out, hell yeah, that shit. I used to do that shit, oh boy, that's fucking big dog style right there.
I haven't gotten to that, man.
At your age, you probably don't want to.
No, definitely not, bro. Definitely not. So anyway, man, we're gonna wrap this motherfucker up. I'm gonna go and, you know, I don't know, man. It's late for me. 10 o'clock.
I gotta get up the train in the morning.
Yeah.
Dude, we need to do this. We need to do this 3-way tour. We're talking about.
Let's make it happen, man.